hospitals are under description.
Accession number 11750, reel 14.
July.
Whoops. Mr. Lineker, reel 14. We were talking about the time when you went to Boyton, E72 mine, there was just a bit of confusion about the date, because you thought it might be February when you were guessing, but in your notes we looked up, it was July. There's no real contradiction there, is there?
No, because the notes that I sent you was actually taken from notes that I'd kept. But when if I'd said February, it was just merely what I was guessing it would be at the time without any reference to any notes, you see. So if I'm out, well, it's just an unhappy
incident. That's fine. So it was July about you.
Yeah.
Right. You were suffering, but I believe that there were some Russians that were also working in E-72.
Oh, yes.
Were they in the same camp?
No. I was just going to say, they wasn't billeted with us. They was kept completely separate. And God knows what the camp would be like, because they were treated terribly, terribly. I don't even know how whether they were fed right, but you could tell by their appearance and it was emaciated.
Worse than us.
Worse than us. It was bad enough for us. I think they worked them till they dropped, till they died.
Did you ever come into contact with them?
We came into contact with them down in underground. We never saw them above ground, because...
Were you working with them, or did you just see them underground?
We worked, maybe they'd have a nod one with you, something like that, but they gave them the most terrible tasks. Same as, shall we say, where they were finishing with the seam. If there was anything naughty, They'd use them before they'd use us, because it didn't matter to them if anything happened to them. They meant nothing. And the treatment was shocking. And the majority, from what I could gather, was Ukrainians. Why, I don't know, but the majority what were there, I believe, were Ukrainians. They'd hardly a rag on their back proper. They was lousy from top to bottom. I don't think they'd had water on the faces for God knows when. It was a terrible condition.
Now, did you come in? I think you mentioned off the record that you came into contact with some of the concentration camp people. Were you very aware of concentration camps and the extermination programs, or did you just see?
No, not as such. All we knew that they was dressed in these, we call them uniforms, the little round outs with the stripes on, and the jackets and trousers. We knew they were Jews, and we used to call them Y. I don't know how the hell they got the name, the Healthy Life Boys. Maybe because of their appearance, because they were gaunt. And since being home, I found out that Auschwitz, according to the map, was practically next door. So they would be using some of the inmates there, because they weren't all Jews, you know, in Auschwitz.
They were up on what they call it,
our pits. They're working outside, above ground, and even women working above ground, pushing and loaded wagons of coal.
And how did their condition compare with the Russians? Were they worse again, or were they about the same, or were they a bit better?
Well, again, I don't know how they were fed, what the feeding conditions was, or even the camp.
But how did they look in comparison?
They looked gaunt.
Worse than the Russians, though.
Just as bad as them, But the Russians didn't even have a decent rag on their back. They did have this outstanding uniform, if you could call it, of the striped jacket with the stars on, or whatever emblem which denotes what there was. I mean, there was all sorts, weren't there, in Auschwitz? Homosexuals, gypsies, you name it. Political prisoners, Jews. They weren't all Jews. Jews claim Auschwitz.
But you didn't know that at the time.
But I didn't know that.
No.
But there was forced labour from somewhere.
Right. Well, what about how were you treated by the guards? you know, well, the guard and the overseer. You said he was called John the Bastard.
John the Bastard was the commandant.
Right.
The commandant of the camp. And he was impeccably dressed. He was only a glorified, shall we say, he wasn't even a sergeant, or a colour sergeant, maybe, in our army. And he was impeccably dressed. And he used to strut about there like a turkey cock, and he'd go into the lazarette. That's the sick bay. And anybody reporting sick, he'd weigh all this lot up, and then he'd just do a snap one a snap check, shall we call it. And when we'd been downstairs, you see, as usual, bartering again. You've got English cigarettes or something like that. If you had a package from home, you've got something to barter with, where the hell it come from, whatever. And you was with civilians, so you bartered. And these that liked a tot used to barter for snaps. And we've even brought coal up. As I've said it before again, we worked in a pit as big as Manchester, and yet you hadn't enough coal to light to keep the fire going, to keep you warm in winter. And we used to bring lumps of coal up, if we could, under his jacket. Now he'd make you wouldn't know when it happened, and he'd make it his business to be waiting for you when you got out the gate, the shaft at the top, and he'd have a couple of his boys with him. And you get a thorough searching. And one of his pet tricks was if somebody came up and they'd got, if it was equivalent to half a bottle of whiskey, half a bottle of schnapps, and it was found on them, he'd just stand there and pour it out. And you might have given your ration of fags for these. And he'd pour it out in front of you and drop the bottle, and then give you a wallop across the face. Right? If you brought coal, he was go berserk. It was worse than the bloody snaps, and yet there's tracks of this down there. Yes? Oh, yeah, he'd give you one in the what's it.
He'd thump you himself.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He'd be so aggravated, yeah.
He'd thump you in the face?
Or in the chest, like that. Yeah. As much as he'd no right to do that. You know.
And that happened to you?
It's happened to me, it's happened to scores of them. And one of his tricks, which is really hard to believe, is even had blokes, not me, is even had blokes, and it reminded me on there last night because it came up about in Stalin's era. I don't know whether you watched it last night, in Stalin's era, what the interrogators did there. And he's even had blokes get down and polish his boots for him. And you wouldn't believe it in this day and age, would you? He's had them doing that with a rag. Give him a rag. Get down. You see. Then, if you did something really, bad, if they found out, as you were talking about, you can't call it sabotage, but disorganising the bloody system down below, it wasn't, the bunker. And the bunker was just a box, big enough to stand in and lie in.
Did you
go? No lie, I've never been in it, no. But I've seen lads that's come out of it after a few days and they've been in complete darkness and they're bloody couldn't see for time in, and just on water and a bit of the brown bread. Punishment, that was. The punishment. As I think I've said about them wanting to, trying to get out of the pit for two or three days. Sickness. Feigned sickness. And the first time I tried that caper on, not alone, three or four of us report sick, diarrhea, stomachache.
Now, did you have that at all, or were you just faking it?
Faking it, because it couldn't prove out else, could it? Unless you stood with you all day waiting for it. Like backache now, isn't it, going to the doctor with backache? He can't prove it. So, we go to the lazarette, the doctor's there, a woman doctor, no less, which we didn't know the first time we went. A woman doctor, German. And immediately we report sick with this. Gets a rubber glove on. Drop your slacks, bend over, and a finger. And if there's nothing liquidised up there, you come in it. Which there wasn't. So, there's no punishment for that. The only punishment you give you if you've lost the bet. And you go back down there now. You see. You didn't even get a shift out of it. You see. Then, another time, I don't know, might have told you, not off on the tip.
Carry on.
About another bright idea. cut a leg, or your arm, cut anywhere. And then we used to put coal dust in. That's when we were learning how to do it, which was crazy, because coal is healing. It's from plant life, originally, isn't it? Coal. And it's an healing property. So we put coal dust in, and it healed it up. And you were left with a tattoo then. The coal. I've got one here on there, around my fingers. So that failed. So the next bright idea was to get carbon out of the lamp, because there was acetylene lamps. No gas down, you see. Butterfly flame lamp. You know the thing? With water and carbide. Put carbide in it. The cup. And that made it bubble up. That really started to go to town on it. And I got 3 days. Like an ulcerated leg.
In the lazarette.
Not in the bed in the lazarette. As an outpatient at the lazarette. She saw it. Dry tagger, you see.
What does that mean?
3 days.
Yes. Sorry.
Isn't it? So, 3 days, which is good. Other lads have gone to extremes. I maybe wasn't brave enough, but they've put feet on the track, they put fingers on, hands, and let another one that's as crazy as them possibly hit it with a shovel or a pick and break them to do it.
You couldn't face that.
Oh, Christ, no. I managed to cut myself. I do that, I know, but not to break fingers and bones. But they would get you see, now they was blokes that really got to the end of the tether. Really at the end.
How did you?
You see, and then again, we're getting back to this. People like that, they might, they were all in different conditions. My mind solely was to get home at any cost, because I felt I'd something to come home to. I'd got that to cling to. Now, these particular blokes, on thinking about it, they might have had nothing to go back to. Their home might have been wrecked. It might have been bombed. The wives and that, the girls might have left them. They'd gone sunk to the bottom. What have I to go on for? They're desperate. They do anything. Gone off their head.
I should have asked, how did you actually cut yourself? I mean, it's not a nice thing to have to do to yourself.
blade, razor blade, because you could buy razor blades. And as I told you, and we got a mark a day.
Could she not tell that it was a razor blade cut?
I didn't go until it's cut. I didn't go until it was all proud flesh.
Ulcerated. And
yes. Oh, yes, I didn't just go and say I've cut my leg and not crack on I'd put a dollop of carbide in. I let it work.
Did you just do that once? Or was,
I did it once.
Did you try anything else?
No. No. Well, I've had things done, not what I've, shall I say, not what I've purposely done, but I have. Now that finger, I mean that finger, there's still a bit of coal dust there now. That finger, I mean, it was crazy. A child wouldn't have done what I'd done. And you know those extension, as I'm talking about, the extension
to the
props in the meter eye, what slide in and out with a what's it. Now, I put that finger in one of the bloody holes, don't I? Eh? Getting hold of it, put the peg in at the top. At the top, you put the peg in to stop it going down. But it's sliding inside the bottom part, and there's holes in it, isn't there? And I've got my finger in one of them bloody holes, haven't I? And the thing drops down to where I want it, and does the finger. Now, that wasn't intentional, but it happened. Couple of days. Shoveling onto that there, as I call the cat, the cakewalk, you know, shoveling onto that at bottom. Well, at the end of it, that way it's going, it's fairly sharp. Shoveling, got my hand on it, don't I? So those was really accidents, unintentional, but they give me a bit of time, a couple of days or so.
When you got a couple of days, what would you do? You were just lying in your bunk or what?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't start doing what we did on the month. Might do a bit of neck cracking, you know, the lice.
Would you sleep a lot during it? You know, when you had a 2 days off or something.
Sleep. Write letters. That's all. Maybe knock something up out of your Red Cross box.
Right.
Because food was very foremost. Even though you hadn't a lot to use, you know, you hadn't a lot to go at. Food was foremost.
You spent a lot of time thinking about it.
Yes, food. If she, I thought about food, then I thought about Dorothy.
Did you do this business of sort of imagining meals and something?
Oh, yes. We used to talk about it. Oh, wait while we get home. Can you just imagine? Could you just imagine it in the morning when you got up, you'd say? And we were getting up to a drink of bloody Herzog's coffee, and we'd be saying, now, could you just imagine getting up? And you've got a plate and a couple of rashers of bacon on, and a nicely fried egg. Maybe it's two eggs. See? And a sausage. Some tomatoes. And white. And a big mug of tea. Yeah, it'd be great that one, you know. And you just visualise it.
Didn't that make it worse for you, though, visualising it, this sort of thing?
But you're punishing yourself. You're punishing yourself, but you still think, well, there's always a chance of getting it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's not the end. Surely to Christ there'll be a time come when we can enjoy this. And it's just nice to think we've got something to go back to. We've got a nice, we've got a home, we've got a wife, we've got a family. And what a meal we could have, you know.
It seems like...
Or a lunch. Yorkshire pud. Lamb, a beef. Or a good English stew. Yeah, a pint of beer. Yeah.
You talked a bit about the desperation of some of the men. Well, you know that.
Yeah.
Well, did you have any suicides or semi-suicides? You know, people doing things that were suicidal, but you know.
No, the only suicide, actual suicide that I didn't see, but obviously Camp Talk was at Lambsdorff.
The one in the water tank.
The one in the water tank. But on the working party, no. No. They might injure themselves badly. They to me, that was extreme. But they might injure themselves badly. But they never went to the idea of saying, oh, well, I'll see myself off. I can't stand no more of this. The majority, you see, are clinging to something to come back to, and it won't always be.
But it's the ones that you mentioned that didn't
but
have
it. Those, I can only assume, had nothing. They was desperate. Their hopes and everything had been shattered by the news, possibly, that they'd had. Because they did get these letters, and I think any bugger who wrote them must have been, they must have been inhuman to write anybody a letter like that.
You'd rather not know.
No. I'd prefer to live in cuckoo land and not know, and then when I got home and I found it all was a load of rubbish, I could sort it out then, but on my own terms, on my own ground.
You think a lot of people, that Dear John letters were a bit sadistic, they didn't need to know.
I'm sure they didn't need to know. Fancy being in a position like that, that they couldn't raise a hand, they couldn't do a thing about it, they're trapped, they're hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles away, can't do a thing, and somebody drops them a line and says, I'm sorry, but I can't carry on waiting for you like this. I've met so-and-so or something like that issue, and I'm going off with him. Or I've been out and I've slipped up, I've been with a yank or something like that, and it's the end of it all. Now, how does somebody feel like that? Eh?
Did you ever get out of the camp, you know, at all, for any reason? Other than working parties to the mine?
On one occasion, I had terrific toothache, and of course I had to report sick, and it was accepted that I had got toothache, even though the doctor wasn't a dentist, and it was arranged for me to be taken under guard into Katowice, which is the nearest city. Town, a huge town in any case, in Poland, and I went to a civilian dentist, and it was one of the easiest teeth I'd ever taken out in my life. And obviously, I thought, well, they wouldn't be too kind about taking it out, especially off me, because I wasn't German or Polish or what have you. But I must say that it was a good job done by the dentist. I didn't hardly feel a thing. So there was no getting back at me in that respect. And that was the only time that I ever got out of the main gate of the camp at E-72.
Just to
clear up. Until we left.
The camp, was that in the coal mine area? I mean, right next to...
In the coal mine... In the pit area, the Groovy area. I mean, it was a huge mine, coal mine.
Did it have more than one shaft?
I think if I'm not mistaken, it had three shafts, and one was used. That they would all be used when they got the shift down for the bringing up of coal, but. It covered a big acreage, so we would be
the camp was
plumped
near.
There. But at the same time, it was still a few minutes' walk to get through the counting and the shower procedure and the lamp collecting.
How many British were there? Roughly.
How many did I say? about 300, was it? 200, 300, something like that, I think I said. But,
and the camp was just the same as the previous camp, same pattern?
Same
nothing
pattern.
Nothing extra to add?
Same pattern. No, no watchtowers.
Did you notice the German guards becoming any more brutal or less brutal as the war went on through 44?
There was... The guards, or postons, as they called them, the guards or postons was the... No, you can't call them dregs, but they were the remnants of the army. There was sick men, the majority of them, old men. It was John himself and his oppo, is the one underneath him, that showed the most arrogance of all. I mean, the others weren't behind by giving you a nudge or saying rouse. I mean, there's come on, hurry up, schnellmachen, and push you with the rifle, and, you know, get moving. It wouldn't hurt you, but it's like somebody pushing you and yourself sad off, you know.
It didn't really get any worse then, or better.
Oh, no, just no. But old John, he was the bloody old sadist, him.
What about the pit supervisor, the Steiger, I think he said?
Yes, the overseer, the German overseer that allocated you to whatever face you was going, and then he would hand you over to the civilian who was in charge of that particular face on that particular shift. And
what was he like? How did he treat you?
Very strict, I would say, go according to the book. Very strict. There was no physical violence, but more, he would nudge you a time or two with that. He used to have it was like a wheel tapper's hammer he had. A long handle, with a pick affair at the end of it.
I thought that was at the E535 that the chap had that.
No, it is Bulldog. Well, we had one there, yes, but I'm talking about Bulldog, who's at East. I mean, they're all alike. I mean, he's a Steiger E535, had up the same same gear with him. His helmet, lamp, and what have you, and his long stick with the pick on, just like it would be at E72. But I thought he was meaning the one at E72 we nicknamed Bulldog, because he just looked like a big, big, huge man with a big bulldoggy face. And he was strict, and he worked according to the book. I suppose he had his job to do. He had to keep the civilians in tow, and he had all those lot underneath him and all. And he could, he's only human, he could lose his loaf if he felt like it, and he wouldn't be averse about giving you a old nudge with his little hammer with the pick on the end. But he never, I don't think for one minute he reported anybody to the camp authorities. If he wanted to say you shouldn't have done that and study, he'd do it down there, you see, and that's the end of the story. There would be no follow up at all. But I think he was strict, and he worked according to the book.
Now, what about?
He had a job to do, in other words.
Was there any British organisation in the camp? You know, any British senior?
Oh,
British?
No, no.
You weren't organising
stuff. We was all of us was either private soldiers or NCOs that had volunteered for work.
But you
there
didn't
was
have,
no officer.
There's no structure though. No senior NCO.
Nobody spoke up, but nobody was there as the mouthpiece for you. Nobody was the liaison between the lads and the camp authorities. It was John, and John ruled, and nobody else was in his way, and you was bloody rubbish underneath.
And what about the question of escape? I think this is probably completely out of the question.
Well, for a start, you're in Poland, which is further east, and for secondly, you want the chance to keep anything to as regards food or anything to store, and thirdly and foremost, you want the bloody strength to go.
So So no one in the camp was thinking of it?
No. There was only one of the main thoughts in the mind as time went on was hoping to God that the Russians would get there. Because it was coming in from the east. We used to get bits of information, as we say, bull over the wire, you know, bush telegraph. The Russians are, where is it now? They're only so many miles from so-and-so and all this. And it's all bolster you up, hearsay or what have you. And funnily enough, we wouldn't have been so very well off if the Russians had released us, because it could have been bloody sight longer getting home.
But you didn't think of that at the time?
We didn't think that. All we wanted somebody to get us out of there.